everyone. I'm hoping you can hear me. This is the first time I've hosted this all by my lonesome. So let's see if it's coming through. Okay, I'm just going to hope it is. All right. Actually, if one of you can, if you guys can just like raise your hands so I can see this is actually working, I'd be so grateful. Great. Okay, I'm coming through. Awesome. Well, hello to everyone. Hope you're having a wonderful, wonderful Friday. And we are going to hit the ground running with some very important questions that have been coming through. I'm very excited to be your host today, your hostess. All right, so if I seem a little bit distracted just because I'm figuring this out for the first time, because usually I have my wonderful Joanna or Anna or somebody with me, and today was not a good day for anyone to co-host, but it's wonderful to be here. Okay, so we will take questions after we address a few of the things that have been sent in, and very happy to hear from you all. So we'd be delighted if you have questions that you brought with you. All right, so first question is, I'm fasting right now, and my Omega juicer is making really nice juice, but as there are always little pieces in the juice, I'm always pressing the juice afterward through a strainer bag, with which I usually make my own almond milk. This is quite a lot of work. I didn't want to have any fiber in the juice. Do you think I can skip this step? That's interesting. I actually have never used the Omega. I have actually used the Omega centrifugal juicer, not the Omega slow masticating. I'm not sure which one she's referring to. This shouldn't be the case. The internal spinner, should not be releasing pulp in little pieces. That's odd. But what I would use rather than a strainer bag is simply a strainer. And I often will use a strainer when I'm making my own juice because there can be little pieces. But a strainer bag that you would use for making almond milk, nut milk, and seed milks will do the trick, but I think it's a lot easier to just use a regular sieve strainer, in which case what you can do is as you pour the juice in, you just take a spoon. You can even do it with your fingers. If your hands are clean and you've got good energy, you can pour into the juice. You can just use your fingers to kind of swirl it around so it goes through the sieve really quickly. That's what I would do, but I'm just curious as to why the juicer is creating or leaving behind or putting into the juice all of these little pieces. That's no good. There must be, this person's making too much juice at once. If the juicer is overwhelmed, then that kind of pulpiness will start to spill over. So maybe try cleaning the juicer halfway through. That will create better results. When I have my juice made at the health food store, I always ask them to make sure the juicer is clean before they make my juice, not because I'm worried that there's going to be some sort of bacteria. I'm not. They're using it all day long, and they're cleaning it all day long. It's simply because if they, made 10 juices before mine, mine's going to wind up like mud rather than juice. So try that, the sieve. Okay. Next question. During the last 10-day juice cleanse, Natalia discussed the difference between being divinely organized as opposed to haphazard. Please talk a little more about this. Okay, that's interesting. So I would go back to the concept, if you've all been familiar with the concept I've been using recently being in the last like 6 to 9 months, of entropy versus entropy. Entropy is the things reaching a higher state of order, and I'm sorry, a lower state of order, and it's entropy, meaning they're reaching a higher state of order. So entropy is the basically the decay of things. So you see metals become entropic when they rust. Anything that is, and everything can fall to entropy, and then you rise to syntropy, which is a higher order. You can think of it as falling into chaos versus evolving into higher forms. So we always want to evolve into higher forms. We don't want to fall into chaos. When chaos comes our way, we want to take the chaos and order it. So otherwise, we can really wind up in trouble. So we live, we're presented the option of living these lives that are more or less disordered. And I was actually just speaking with somebody about this idea that we are, just because, you know, life involves maybe travel and children and busyness and schedules and all these things, that we should just capitulate to that and say, okay, well, that's what life is. And so I have to do that. And so I need to create a life that revolves around that. And I need to bend and break my rules and, you know, and just live out of what I would call ritual. Our lives really should be ritualistic. I mean that in the best possible way. I don't mean to being OCD and all of that. That's another form of sort of the matrix telling you, you know, what's wrong with being organized. Another extreme. But what I'm talking about is a life that is really focused around self-care and beauty and harmony and order. So this idea of things being divinely organized means that we're not trying to assert our own ideas necessarily of what order should look like, but that which is in flow with nature. So that keeps us from ever being worried about falling into some sort of OCD category, because what we're doing is we're aligning with flow. We're aligning with the way things work in nature, and we are nature. If you've forgotten, you actually are nature. So if you're allowing yourself to be formed by things that are unnatural, that's always going to age, degenerate, and make you sick. So divine organization is basically understanding how nature's organized and how the universal laws work, and then applying them to your life. And if you live in a world that is haphazard, you're going to have haphazard thoughts, relationships, feelings, your surroundings. Everything's just going to be in this kind of haphazard state, and you're never going to feel grounded. You're never going to feel centered. The things that you really need to be before you do anything else, before you even decide what you're going to do as your career or with your time and energy and resources, before you can even think about how you want to educate your children, or before you even think about how you want to decorate your bedroom, you know, or what dress you should wear to the occasion. You've got to be centered. Otherwise, everything is going to be a mistake purchase, doesn't work. It's all going to be a waste. So if we don't want to live lives where we're constantly cleaning up after ourselves or being wasteful, we must be centered, and from that center, live lives that are divinely organized. And everything else needs to be put aside until we can get to that space. And then everything we do will be fruitful. Okay, hopefully that makes a little sense. The next question is, please speak about the state of, quote, all or nothing, and also provide some suggestions as to how one may find consistency. Okay. That's a great question. So when we think of all or nothing, let's go back to the transition bridge. And if you're, I mean, most of you are familiar with the transition bridge concept, but if you're not, the transition bridge is basically the understanding that you are where you are, but that might not be for the highest good of your fullest potential, for your syntropic cycle, for your divine organization, for your divine embodiment. So there's the you that you are in now, the you that you're embodying, and then there's a bridge. And then on the other side of that bridge is the divinely organized, ordered, radiant you that doesn't have all these problems of the world, which only come from the haphazard world. And I mean that on every level. I mean the cancers, the you know, the mental conditions, the emotional problems, the sexual dysfunction, they are all part and parcel of the same worldly haphazardness. So we have this bridge. And we don't have to be either on the one side of the bridge or the other side of the bridge. We don't have to be all or nothing. We simply need to be at the appropriate place on the bridge in the direction where we're facing the divinely organized part of ourselves, the being that we know we can embody, that we're moving toward. We have to have a vision. We're going to go, you know, I love that saying, look where you're headed because that's where you're going. So we need to be looking in that direction. Okay. This is why I think Lot's wife turned to salt, because she turned back and she questioned it, and she looked back on Sodom and Gomorrah. And, you know, don't look back. There's nothing for you there. Just you've been there. There's a reason why you wanted to get on the transition bridge. You don't need to keep on you know, returning to go in and feel the pain again and again and again. Look forward. Look at that being. You do not have to be him or her today, but you need to understand why he or she is of value for you to, why he or she is, it is a value for you to value what that embodiment is, because you need to move toward it. So how do you find consistency as you cross the bridge? Well, a few things. One, you don't fall into self-pity and into self-indulgence and the sense that the world wants to give you and all the reinforcements of your so-called friends and supporters, where they say, oh, come on, just have a live a little. You're not just going to live a little. You're going to live a lot if you don't do that. All those trappings. So consistency comes, you can only find consistency if you create, maybe even write it all down, these things that trip you up. The traps have to be seen ahead of time, and they have to be seen for what they are. Otherwise, there won't be any consistency. You know, there'll always be a reason. You know, but people always say, like, for example, I was with a good friend the other day, and I know how much this path means to her. And someone presented her with a plate of cookies that she said she made herself and brought from, you know, there's a special grandmother's recipe from the old country, and she made all of these, and you have to have one. Well, she comes from a background where her programming is, you know, if something is offered to you like this, that you take it and you receive it. And I respect that. I do. But I don't know that she was actually respecting herself when she decided to just stay in that programming and take that into her body, because I know how badly she wants to be freed of the addictions that the sugars and the starches create in the body. And there's no judgment there at all. I mean, as I said, I respect the fact that that she was following that part of herself. It's where she has to be now, because there's a part of her that hasn't seen it clearly enough, that she needs to release that, that that's part of a burden she's been carrying, that she needs to make other people feel good about what they do. And, you know, and so everyone looked at me like, aren't you going to take that too? I mean, this comes from the old country. Like, she made this, and she's offering it. It's her soul and her, you know, her love, and she's giving this to you. And how can you turn it away? Well, I can tell you, it's not hard for me to turn it away at all. And it does not mean that I don't love and appreciate this woman and the good that she feels she's bringing through her cookies. But it doesn't mean that it has to be that part of her gift is what I need to receive. You know, if somebody truly has a gift to give you, they can give it through their heart. And somebody, when people give gifts, they can often give things that don't have any heart in them at all, but they spent a lot of money on them, or they, you know, and then there's all the guilt wrapped up in things. And it's time to just, if you want consistency, those strings cannot be pulled. You can't be, you know, Pinocchio, you know, I love it. I got no strings to hold me down. There are no strings on me. That's the kind of way you have to live. There can't be strings on you. There can't be buttons. You have to see the trap, and you have to just be so clear that it's part of your growth for you to say, I'm sticking to what I know is good for me. And then if there's some other way you need to work through something with somebody, like in a scenario like this or some other scenario, you find a way, but you need to take ownership of what matters to you. Remember that you wake up with yourself in the morning, and, you know, whatever you see other people doing, I often, you know, when I go out for dinner with people and the consumer, they'll drink a lot, or at the end of the day, I mean, they want to pressure you, and they want you to, you know, go drink for drink with them and all this. And you have to wake up with yourself in the morning. At that moment, you can give in to the pressure, but you're all going to wake up at next morning at, you know, whatever time you wake up, and you're going to have to feel the way you feel. And you're not going to be wishing that you had more to drink or had, you know, more of the dulce de leche or some kind of ganache chocolate cake. You know, it's going to be quite the opposite. And, you know, you've got to, but in order to see that, you have to be divinely organized, as we talked about before. If you're really in your center, you know what's good for you. You know how far you can go, to what degree you can indulge, and at what point it's really not going to be for your highest good. And it's just not worth it. But then sometimes we have to have enough pain to get to that point, and enough of those moments of, okay, note to self, we can't do this again. And maybe that has to happen 10,000 times before you finally stop doing it. Okay, let me just make sure that there is no hands up while I continue here. Okay, so I will continue. All right, next question. How did you give up all the things that were not life-generating for your good? And then there are a few bullet points here. What inspired you to never look back? What are the, quote, keys to the kingdom in terms of the most pure and in line with God ways to eat? And how can one overcome falling back into old habits even after experiencing the good feeling of following what is best? Okay, that's one grouping of questions from someone. So let me see if I can unpack that a bit. How did you give up on all the things that were not life generating for good? Well, I didn't do it all at once, and I can't say that my life is without any of those things. For example, I love my dark chocolate, and it's not life generating. Newsflash: chocolate is not healthy. Neither is red wine. But they can give me a place for them. Same thing with goat cheese, which I love. So the wine, the cheese, the chocolate are non-life-generating things that I still do. So I won't say I gave up all the things. But why did I give up on the things that really made a difference to me? That might be the better question. The things that I really had to give up, I would say starch, grain starches, probably the biggest one that will probably make the biggest impact to talk about. They are so inflammatory to my system, and they cloud my brain. And it basically, to me, probably, I've never done hard drugs, but it's probably the equivalent of the damage the hard drugs would do. It took me understanding deep tissue cleansing to understand why my body was having that reaction. And I have a more sensitive system than most, but there are a few things that had that kind of effect on me, and that was one major one. So I finally had to basically just cut it out, and I knew also that it wasn't one of those things where I could just have a little bit. It was very helpful on the transition bridge, you know, from going to eating. You know, I used the sprouted grains as a transition tool, and I think I could probably do, I haven't dabbled in millet or quinoa or buckwheat even in years, but they are the transition grains that really work if you needed to lean on transition grain. But I basically just said, you know what, this is just all pain. There's nothing here for me anymore. If I want that starchy experience, let me find another way to get it through a baked sweet potato or butternut. Or acorn squash was a really helpful tool for me. Baked acorn squash in the oven, just cut off the top of the acorn and take out the seeds. You can put the acorn squash top and the acorn seeded acorn into the oven at about 350 degrees. Let that bake, and it is just pure heaven. It can be totally clean. You can put a little coconut oil or a little bit of organic butter and sea salt on that if you want to, but if that doesn't give you the fix you're looking for, a little cinnamon and or pumpkin pie spice, those kinds of things really helped me. So just really great recipes to turn to. Also, for example, one of the things that I quickly discovered was that when you like pizza or pasta, it's usually the sauce and the cheese. So this is how I discovered how digestible and delicious and comforting and yummy and filling having a big plate of vegetables with some great high-quality marinara sauce and shredded goat cheese was. So these are the things that help us when we know it's time for something to go. Necessity is the mother of invention, right? So that's when you'll have your biggest epiphanies and you'll be super creative. It's the creative who succeed at this. You have the heart of a lion, the vision of an eagle, and the creativity of the most, you know, inspired child. So that's what I would say to that. I mean, and also, of course, animal products and a lot of other things that I gave up, but it all came down to there being a distinct reason. And looking at it very closely, really analyzing the situation, looking at animal products and saying, you know, other than the goat cheese, which I hang on to because I like it, and there's not saying it's life-generating, but it has a place for me anyway. Some people don't like it at all, and it doesn't bother them to give it up. But you know, when I really thought about the animal thing, even at the point where it was time for me to give up fish, which was only a couple of years ago, it was just, okay, this just is not ideal for my system, not for where I'm going. It also depends on where you want to go. You know, it's number one, what is your sensitivity level to the substance? And number two, how does it impact you? What is the actual symptom it creates? And does that keep you from your evolution? Does it keep you from your centropic upward spiral? And that's how you decide. And then you must ask if you really want to go there, which is where I think everyone who's on the evolutionary path, who's is in the centropic upward spiral, needs to go, is this good for all of life, or is this just good for me? And then you can break that down microcosmically and macrocosmically, so as above, so below. If something is not good for life at large, it's not good for you. If it's not good for you, it's not good for life at large. That's number one. Number two is that if you're just the microcosmic as below aspect of this is if you're just serving your palate, you're not serving your larger body. So you have to say, well, this might be really nice for my mouth experience, and my palate loves this, and I just go into bliss when I take this in. But do you know what my liver does? My liver just recoils. And do you know what my pancreas does? My pancreas gets totally frightened out of its shell. And, you know, it just can't cope. And what happens to my blood chemistry? It becomes acidic. And so what does that do to my organs? And then what happens to my colon? It becomes inflamed, and it can't break this stuff down. So forget about what it does for your mouth. You know, we have to get beyond that. That's just our, you know, it's like a pathogenic thing. Well, who cares what's good for the body? I'm just going to do it anyway. You know, who cares what's good for the planet? I'm going to do it anyway. It's only going to result in your pain later on. So anyway, that's what made the difference for me. It's just being, you know, all this is honesty. It's looking at things as what they truly are, as opposed to the way we can, you know, make it work. The reason this country is in so much debt is because you can always find a reason to get what you want. Say, okay, well, I'll enjoy it now, pay later. Okay, well, that's going to add up. You know, and at some point, you will have to pay in some way. So you have to always ask yourself, what is the price? And the wonderful thing is that when you're in the light-generating space, there is no price. There's only a price to be paid when things are non-light-generating. That's a really big secret right there. Okay, so... this is a good one. What are the, quote, keys to the kingdom in terms of the most pure and, end quote, in line with God, end quote, way to eat? That's a cute one. Okay, so when I see that, I go back to Leviticus and all my religious upbringing. I was actually raised by a Southern Baptist, and my mother and my father was Jewish and was raised in a Jewish country club, going to church on Sundays, and then it was complete confusion. But my father actually converted to Christianity, and so, you know, he kind of did whatever my mother said he should do. In fact, I'll tell you something funny. On their first date, and this is my Christian mother sitting down with my Jewish father having their first date, and my Jewish father orders lobster, and my Christian mother says, and she was actually his assistant, so she said, "Mr. Barrett, if you eat that, I won't kiss you goodnight." Okay, so my dad sent it back. to his credit. And of course, you know, his life was never the same after that. But so this is why I find this question funny, because it comes down to all of the details of what is kosher, what is not kosher, what does the Bible say, what does God say, what is, you know, and every church has their own things in the Seventh-day Adventists, to the Muslims. It's just, it's all really very interesting to look at and understand why they said what they said at the time when they said it. And okay, here's the gig. Our bodies, physiologically, are not as broken down then as they are now. So we've had generations of degeneration. Or you can just say we've had degeneration. Keep it simple. That's number one. Number two is that they were living in a world that was super alkaline. So the air, the soil, the water, everything that was springing forth from it, and the animals that were feeding off of it were all super alkaline too. So alkaline systems consuming alkaline food, whether it was from an animal or not, they were doing fine. Now change the whole scenario. Okay, just rip up that whole scene because it does not apply. Forget the whole thing about refrigeration too. I mean, that's a momentary blip on the screen historically, where we were not living off the land and we were living in cities and things were dirty and it's a whole different setup. And that's just a few hundred years of, you know, of people not knowing which way was up because they were transitioning to a city lifestyle, which was never the case before, and they had to figure it out. And they did figure it out. It took them a couple hundred years, or, you know, maybe the better part of 500 or 600 years, but they figured it out. Anyway, so moving beyond that, though, what we have is what belongs in the human body. Most important thing to know is that we are mostly water, and so we need to consume what I call wet foods. Wet foods are foods that are highly water-containing. Now, if you have a really strong body, like they had thousands of years ago, and you consume foods that are not entirely water-containing, like, say, cooked lamb, cooked sheep, cooked cow, the body will be able to manage that because the intestinal fortitude is so strong. So what could the human being consume and stay in a relatively high state of health a couple thousand years ago versus now is totally different. Let's take that a step further, though. Are animals, you know, fit for consumption? Is it something that we should be consuming anyway? Well, if we think about it from what we're made of light, we're made of matter is vibrating at low density, but ultimately is light. And so what are we feeding when we're feeding ourselves? We're actually not even just feeding our cells, we're wanting to encourage, let me put this a better way, we're electromagnetic beings, so we actually live on conducting energy, electrons, the actual current of electrons. And so we need to have more electrons if we're exhausting our electrons, or if we want to stay alert and active, we need these electrons. We need to feed our body with electrons. It so happens that wet foods, organic wet foods, so high water content foods, are filled with high vibration energy, which is the electron energy. So we're actually putting, what we want to do is we want to flood the body with electrons, and we do that when we eat high water content foods. Now, when we do that, we have alkaline substances, which are high electromagnetic current substances, entering cells and tissues of high electromagnetic conductivity, and it literally gives us the charge, just like you would have flowing through your computers or your electronic devices, gives the charge and moves on. That's what you want to have happen. If you put the substances that are acidic, that are not negatively charged, you guys know this, I'm just going to quickly put it together, it's going to meet with our alkaline tissue, because human tissue is alkaline. It's becoming less alkaline, but it's supposed to be alkaline, and it's going to stick in the body. So the keys to the kingdom are putting things in the body that do not stick like glue stuck on you into the tissue. After that, it's all about ethics. So it's, okay, then even though I, you know, might like to eat meat. Is it good for the network of life? Is it good for the soul of the animal? Well, I mean, there are a few arguments there. Some would say that we evolve the animal by consuming it. I don't know if that's true. I think in certain circumstances, if there's a need for it and it's blessed and that's the intention, that can happen. I don't think that's the way we're doing it now. But the rest of that I'll kind of leave up to you for now. Also, when we think about that, as you reflect on it, there's human survival, and then there's spiritual evolution. So can you consume those things in moderation or in small amounts, let's say, in a highly alkaline body in the scenario where your feet are in the soil and you're consuming life-generating water and breathing life-generating air, kind of like the American Indians did, and being really connected to life. And then there's the question, well, what if you have everything you need and you don't need to kill animals for it? So you're not, you know, it's not the middle of winter in Montana and you don't have access to mangoes, so you have to kill a buck. What if you have the abundance of leafy greens and berries and seeds and fruits? Do you make the choice to kill the animal unnecessarily? And some will say, oh, well, that's why we have the brains we have and all that. That's a whole lot of hogwash. That's a lot of misguided, probably deliberately, I think, created, what's the word I'm looking for, misinformation, disinformation, and it serves some factions that are not interested in our highest good. And, you know, there is not... The health, the beef industry, they're all industries. The dairy industry, they're businesses. So they have, you know, they're the ones lobbying to Washington. These corporations. We're living in a world that's ruled over by corporations. That's why we have the saying to be in the world but not of the world. That means to be rising way above it, and you can see what's going on, but not be in it. I mean, to not be of it, not to be made up of it, to be living amongst it, but totally seeing it from a higher perspective, the eagle vision. Okay, so hopefully that is connected, answers that well. And also just being, when I talk about being in line with God, remember that we are all part of the network of life. So I like to think of God as being the full composite of what we all are together. The intelligence that is the collective but higher of all. So we are part of the body and the intelligence of that which we call God, which connotes different things for different people. So maybe a tricky word to use, but if we're going to be in line, then we're in the network of life. We're serving the network of life. We're not serving ourselves. Everything that is for himself is about the lower, is about the what I called in the latest interview, the beast, and that's the pathogenic. That's that which is corrosive and trophic to life. Okay. How can one overcome falling back into old habits even after experiencing the good feeling of following what is best? That's a really convoluted kind of question. What they're really trying to say, I think, is, you know, how can I stop doing the things that I know I shouldn't do? I mean, some people learn through pain, some people learn through joy, and some people learn through both. So it's just a matter of putting one foot in front of the other every day and seeing where influences derail you and choosing life over the alternative. Because when you say old habits, I'm assuming it means, you know, habits that bring you down, you know, things that don't enable you to expand. One thing you can do is remember that these old habits, she calls them bad habits, undermining habits, they all have a contracting effect on you. So love is inclusive and love is expansive. So are all good things in life. They're expansive. and they encourage you to expand. You know how you feel when you're in a great relationship or you're with a friend that you just totally trust? You can say anything. You can just totally uncensored speak your heart, and you're just expanding. You're just spreading your proverbial wings with them. And then you're with somebody who you know judges you, and you know you have to be careful what you say, and it's going to be mistaken and all this. So you contract. Physically, you might, you know, make a fist. You might feel your stomach clenching. You might feel your throat chakra closing. You know, those are all signs of contraction. So what you can do is, if you're asking how to overcome falling back into old habits, really start to feel. This is another way to, as a really practical tool, and to anchor the body. Because what we're talking about, I mean, with this work, we're talking about the body a lot. And sometimes we go beyond into other concepts that relate to the body, but we can easily get into our head and forget about our bodies. So see and feel when you contract. And contraction is the step before the calcification. It's in the decay cycle. It's not where you want to be. So if you can just identify it as a place of contraction or an event that causes contraction in you, you can say, you know what? I don't want to contract anymore. I want to expand. I want to feel freedom. I don't want to feel shackled. And then you can figure out, well, what is the alternative? What is the life-generating side of it? Where can this take me? And then hopefully you'll find expansion there. And then, you know, you talk about the good feeling of following what is best. That good feeling comes from expansion. You can't be creative. You can't be in joy if you're in contraction. Okay. What are some strategies for eliminating toxins that contribute to autonomic nervous system malfunctions in women of menopausal age, such as claustrophobia and dysautonomia? I don't know that one. Dysautonomia. I'm going to look that one up real quick. Give me a second. Okay, my dear caught me on something I have no idea about. Okay, it's telling me it's a condition in which the autonomic nervous system malfunctions. It doesn't tell me much. Let me just see if I can. It's an umbrella term. Okay, so then maybe we should just think about neurological disorders and let me go back to the original question. All right. Claustrophobia, nervous disorders, that sort of thing. What are some strategies for eliminating toxins that contribute? Okay, well then... there's a lot of things that would contribute to autonomic nervous system malfunctions, and they wouldn't just be physical toxins. They would be toxins on every level. Remember that the nervous system runs right through the center of the intestine, and when you have a blocked intestine, I've said this so many times, you can't feel. You get depressed. You feel stressed. That contraction happens. So just everyone take a really deep breath right now and just open your chest up and feel your heart opening. You know, when we walk, when we sit, when we stand, our chest should be in front of us. It shouldn't, you know, I see people walk around the streets of New York, they're being led by their head, really walking like pigeons. Okay, we are not pigeons. What is that in Mary Poppins? She says, we are not a codfish. Okay, we're not pigeons. We walk with our chest forward, heart forward, okay, shoulders back. Take a deep breath. Now, you know the answer to this question. These are the layers and layers of programming. And they come from the mental and the emotional, and then they're also in the food and the way we eat and the social patterns of eating, the social gatherings and the events and the holidays and all those things. So, yes, it's in the water. Yes, there's all this pharmaceutical fallout in the water, which is causing this. There's the fluoride and the chlorine and the bromide. these things are all contributing to the demise and the aggravation and the inflammation of the nervous system, and have and contribute to the emotional event of fear. Because that's basically what this is fear, claustrophobia, whatever phobia it is. It's literally, etymologically, fear. So we go back to contraction. Anything that causes contraction, which is going to be anything that is acidic, physically, emotionally, mentally, is going to contribute to these things. So the question becomes how to detoxify from them is just what we're doing every day, which is looking at what we're putting into our bodies. What's the origin? Where does it come from? Is it acidic? How acidic is it? Does it have to be there? Is there an alternative? Can we transition away from it? And the answer to all those things is yes, and then you just do it. And you do it fearlessly. You do it knowing, like your chest is forward, like the old way with the head forward. Now you're just doing it because you know it's time. You don't want it, I haven't got time for the pain, right? We just, it's done. That's behind us. We don't need to go back there. We've been there. We've experienced that. Now let's experience something higher. Let's experience what's next. Okay. Let's see. I recently turned 60. Congratulations. Stress is a challenge in my life. I have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and am recovering from a painful divorce. I follow a vegan diet 80% of the time. Occasionally, I will eat fish or egg when I feel the need to ground myself or when my body asks for extra protein. I also have a concern with my calcium-magnesium balance, which I treat with supplements. Okay, and then some questions from that. Which of your books do you suggest would be the most appropriate for me to start? I would say any woman should start with Detox for Women. And if it's a guy who you know you have addictions to bread and starch and sugar, also start there. So that's the first question. The second one is, do you have special recommendations for someone my age, or is your detox protocol equal for all ages? It's equal for all ages. And the only difference will be that there will be more accumulation based on your age. And if there's more accumulation, there's also going to be more fatigue of the internal organs and the intestine, and the bloodstream will be in need of greater cleansing, for lack of a better word. So it will also mean that because the system has been acidified for so long, the bones are going to probably be compromised too, which we know this is we live in a culture of osteoporosis. So just know that all these things are reversible as the body releases the accumulation and it alkalizes. So just know it may take a little more time, but every day, every green juice, every colonic, every green salad, just day by day by day is going to turn everything around for you. Okay, what are your thoughts about hormonal imbalances and hormone replacement therapies? I actually address that really thoroughly in my new book, Forever Beautiful. So I would just have to refer you to that because I would want you to sit down and really read there's a lot of information there that you'll need to know. Okay. What are some strategies for dealing with sensitivities to food combinations for someone who experiences migraines, even with a slight error in what I eat together? Okay. Dealing with food sensitivities to food combinations. Well, I'm not sure I completely understand other than it sounds like you're trying to food combine well, but you're still getting sensitive with certain foods mix. Migraines either are coming from acidic substances that are entering the bloodstream, or they're coming from huge amounts of accumulation in the intestine. So if you can make sure that your food is unadulterated and the waste that you're holding is leaving, that shouldn't be a problem for too much longer. Okay, this is the last question within this set. How can I overcome a slow brain, quote, slow brain in the morning? It's all about chi flow. So if things are slow in the morning, I would say a couple things. One, where's your inspiration? Because life has to, if you're not living an inspired life, I really don't think the body can work, the mind can work, the heart can work, anything can work, and I don't think life is going to be very joyful. Got to figure out what inspires you. You have to have a reason to be like, yes, another day, the sun is here again, like it's up, even if it's not up and it's cloudy. Like I get to go out and express and create, and if that's not happening, once the clearing happens in the body, you should start to feel that more and more. But there has to be an enthusiasm for life. And if it's not there, it's not because you were the one person in the world that didn't get that. It wasn't, you know, you weren't there the day that God was handing that out. Not at all. It just means that there's some sort of a blockage. And so you go through all the layers of the body and you work through the blockages. Where was the childhood trauma? Where were you told that, you know, life was supposed to be a mundane, difficult thing? Where were you, where did you get the impression that, you know, life was drudgery or that you had to do a job that you hated? There's a million different blockages. You can have a whole bunch of them, a whole bunch of small ones or one really big one. But you have to just start releasing those things, because the morning should be the time when you're really as clear as it comes, and time will come too when you're that way, even without coffee, if you choose to be. You don't have to give up your coffee, but once you get clear and your system, your cells start humming and your night's sleep is really about recovery and regeneration, you should wake up buzzing, and you'll know you've gotten somewhere when you do. And that's just not, you know, some sort of pie in the sky. That's a real, it's a visceral experience. When you do your deep tissue cleansing and you sleep well and your heart is leading your life and you're feeling inspired, you will wake up like a little hummingbird in the morning. Your body will be going zzzz. And you'll remember, because you'll be like, wait, I think that's familiar. I used to feel that when I was 4 or 6 or, you know, however far back. There's going to be a familiarity in it. It's going to feel really like your home. Okay. This is the last question I have here, but I will then take questions, live questions. In regards to the video Natalia posted last night, what are some action steps we can take to clear the self-loathing programs? I'm assuming we need to stop watching TV, reading gossip and fashion magazines, etc. Are there any specific meditations or other activities we can do to clear the programs already embedded in our subconscious? How can we prevent things we've cleared from coming back in? Okay, wow. This is a major process, and it's basically the same as awaken and release is in the body. It's identify and dissolve. So you have to really look at everything in your life and say, where does this come from? Is this an influence from factions that don't have my highest good in mind? Is this an influence from my parents or my peers or my teachers or my church or all these that just didn't know any better, that just were executing on society's way of doing things? So, you know, all forgiveness and, you know, remedy to them, but you're not going to be part and parcel of it anymore, or you're not going to be part of the game and the story anymore. And then you also need to see an alternative. So there's a great quote. I think it might be Franz Kafka who said, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can't take away somebody's world unless you're prepared to give them a better one. So I'm never going to say to you, you know, just walk away from what you've got. I'm prepared to give you a better vision. It's something that really does work. And it's not because it's mine. It's because it's actually universal law. It's the immutable that which works. So because it's interconnected in it, and that's where chi flows, that's where the life force flows. And if you're hooked into it, if you're connected and you're unblocked, you're going to get it. And when you get it, you start conducting it. And when you conduct it, there's nothing other than creativity and joy and love that flows through you. So it's basically very mechanical. As unmechanical as it is, it's very mechanical. It's just a system that works. So you just have to go through all of those things and say, where did this come from? Where did this thought come from? But we start with belief systems, and we ask, where did the belief systems come from? They come from our culture. They come from our sort of whole social structure. And then these belief systems have thoughts and values that are like their children. And if you accept those, then you walk around with those same thoughts and values, and they determine your actions, your communications, basically anything you do or say. So if you can cut it off at the pass, by eradicating the belief system, by seeing where it's come from, then you basically, not to be cruel, but you kind of kill all the children too. And then you become free and you become sovereign. But that's not a process that happens overnight. And if it did, you'd probably feel like you were, you know, falling free fall at 20,000 feet. So that's not what we're interested in, because there's no need for this to be jolting at all. It should be gentle. It should be kind of more like, you know, I love to ride my bicycle, so bicycle analogies are nice for me. Just like being on a nice ramp, cruising down a glorious hill in Provence on your bicycle, like, this feels good. Let it go, let it go. As my 2.5-year-old would say, let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. So out of pitch, out of tune, sorry. But you get the idea. It's a process of seeing that it doesn't hold value for where you want to go anymore. It's like we talked about in the Avatar course. It's like the sandbags that are holding down your hot air balloon. You cannot go up with them on. You have to let them go. So you release the sandbags, and you start to get lighter, and you go up, 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 and away. And you have a lovely view from there. Things become clear. You have an exhilarating experience. It doesn't mean it's always going to be easy, because there are people around you that are going to see your hot air balloon going up and being like, well, where are you going? And wait, I can't do that, so you can't leave me. And but what about this? And they're going to try and pull you down. You're going to throw the sandbags at you. And so, like, you know, try and get them into your basket so you come back down. Or they're going to throw hooks onto it. And, you know, but meanwhile, you know, it's up to you whether you want to keep soaring or not. But it's dismantling all of it, really. And there are moments when you feel high as a kite when you're doing it, and you just know, you have every confidence. And there are moments when you think, oh, my gosh, what am I doing? Am I crazy? You know, maybe everybody else is right, and I'm insane. But then you say to yourself, but really, I feel so sane right now. This is like the sanest I've ever felt in my life. And meanwhile, they're, you know, taking their Adderall and their Prozac and knocking back their alcohol and their starch and sugars, and, you know, and they're looking at you saying, no, but this is good. This is normal. This is life. So it'll be up to you in those moments. It always is up to you. You have everyone's support, but at the end of the day, it's up to you to make the decisions you're going to make, which, of course, is part of the fun and free will aspect. It's very empowering. Okay, that is it for the questions that have come through, I believe. I'll check and see if anything's come through in the meantime. But feel free to raise your hand, and I'll see if I can bring you online. This is going to be a new one for me, but I'll try and figure it out. Oh, here's a hand. Okay, let me see if I can do this. All right. Okay. Oh, there's a bunch of hands. Okay. Go from the top down. Heather, I'm bringing you. I'm attempting to bring you on. Let me see if I have Heather. Can you hear me? Let me see. Heather, raise your hand again. I may have double clicked too much. Oh dear. Okay, Heather, I'm gonna come back to you if you still want to raise your hand. Okay. Hikari, I'm going to bring you on. Okay, Hikari, can you hear me? Hikari, are you there?
Oh. Hello?
Hi, great. Okay. We did it.
I didn't really raise my hand. I'm sorry. I heard my name. I was like, really?
Okay. Sorry. It did look like it came up, but like I said, I'm a novice at this. Don't worry. I won't put you on the spot. Okay, I see now. It looks like Kara Regan's hand is up. So I'm gonna go there if I'm mistaken. Oh wait, that just went down. You see, not very gifted at this. These lights come on. You guys have to forgive me, because from my point of view, it looks like hands are coming up. Kristen, you're lighting up. So I'm gonna there. Kristen.
Hello?
Hi. Did you raise your hand?
Yes, I did.
Oh, yay. Okay. Wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad to be talking to you. The question I have is about enemas at home. Mm-hmm. I have some well-meaning people in the medical community who are telling me that they cause, harm to the colon. And my question to you is what is your view on that? I can't think of a word exactly of what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Perforation,
mm-hmm.
I think, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That spring a bell.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well-meaning medical professionals. So it's an excellent question. I'm gonna put your microphone down just so we don't have the background noise, but I'll bring you back on after I've spieled. Okay. So basically, there's a few things that maybe I didn't do that. Let me have you just mute. I don't know if you can mute on your end. Okay, so just a little background noise there. But anyway, there are a few things that they'll bring up. One is, yes, this perforation concern. Secondly, the removal of good bacteria. And I've addressed the second one many times. I don't know that you all need to hear me say that again, explain that again. But with the perforation, it's really kind of... they're not educated about enemas. So when you go to medical school or you're studying to be a nurse or some sort of medical practitioner, there is no education in enemas. It's not part of what they learn. All they learn is that anything other than the medical approach shouldn't be administered, is probably dangerous, and they hear things. You know, they hear things, gossip and stuff about different things, and so they are concerned. Enemas used to be the first thing the medical professional would use to if someone had an ailment, a major ailment like a headache, a bad headache like migraine or constipation or stomach pains, the enema bag was like the first thing that would come out, and they were all over the place in the hospitals, especially before the Second World War. And in fact, if you were to ask your grandparents about enemas, if they're old enough, they would tell you, yeah, sure, of course, we always use enemas. Maybe in some cases now we're at the stage where it has to be the great-grandparents. And enemas are used around the world, outside of Europe and America and the Western world. So they're a very fundamental, basic tool that everyone but, us, our culture has used as a basic, just one of those things you have in your medicine cabinet, as it were. Very, very basic tool. And if you use it the way we do, you lay on your left side, you take the water in gently, and, there is no way of perforating your colon that I can possibly think of. I don't know anyone in all the years. I've been supporting colon cleansing for 15 years, and if you think about the reach of all the books and all the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, I've never heard of a single case of anybody harming themselves with their enema kit. It's one of those things that you have to consider the source, consider how educated they are about these sorts of things. Where did they hear it from? What's their reasoning? And then weigh that against what you know, and then you think about what it means to take some water into your large intestine to hydrate, reconstitute the waste so that it can leave, so that you don't actually get sick with degenerative disease and other acute organ issues, and contaminate your blood and your ovaries with a septic system. It's one of those things you'll have to just experience and determine yourself, which is basically where we all are in this stage of living in a world where the information that we're getting from those so-called medical authorities or health authorities is so backward and upside down. We have to just be brave and undertake on our own. But that's the best answer I can give you right now. Are you still there, Kristen?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay,
and the people that I was getting, I read all your books, and I really do think you're the highest authority, honestly, on weight loss, detoxification, et cetera. And I was getting some colonics, and the main source that told me that about the enema is one of the colon hydrotherapists that said, oh, don't do enemas. They cause perforation of the colon. You need to get colonics because they're the highest form, which I do like colonics, but I also, because of financial reasons, just can't afford to get them as often as I would like. So that's why I was bringing up the subject of enemas to her, and she just kind of went a little ballistic, I guess, about...
Wow, I'm really surprised. I'm glad you've clarified that. I'm really surprised to hear that because it sounds to me that she was just wanting more business, and that's really disappointing because, you know, all the colon hydrotherapists I know will empower their clients by helping them know how to give themselves a really great enema so that they can, you know, do this work in between sessions and save them the time, the money, the, you know, the effort of having more colonics than they truly need. That's disturbing, actually. So thank you for sharing it, nevertheless.
Thank you very much for your response. I really appreciate it. So as far as the home enemas, and their books, I really haven't seen as far as the frequency, which is what's harmful to someone. Is it harmful to do it in the beginning of a detoxification process to do it 3 or 4 times a week? Is there a guide that you should follow as far as elimination and when you know it's okay to back off, or just kind of a general guideline for someone, in my case, who's in the very beginning stages of detoxifying and who is extremely toxic, who needs lots of colonics, so to kind of start off with?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you feel that first of all, you never want to do an enema when you feel that the waist that you're holding is up high. So the enema works best when the bulge, let's say, the expansion is low down. You want things to be in your lower abdomen. If your upper abdomen is really distended, then it probably means that you're not digesting very well. And you want to give things a chance to kind of calm down. Doesn't mean you can't do the enema at that point. It just means that it may be uncomfortable, and there could be a lot of reverse gas pressure anyway. Having said that, releasing the left side of the large intestine, which is like the end part of it, the stuff that's like ready to go, releasing that will help the lower intestine, the small intestine, release into the large intestine because it will act as a vacuum port. Administering your enemas when you're not so descended up high, but you feel that there's a lot that can leave down low, you'll have the most successful, most comfortable enema experiences. But really, if you're doing it on an empty stomach, earlier on in the day, better, because, you know, you haven't eaten, and you have copious amounts of waste leaving, it's always a good thing. Because remember, when you're awakening this much, if you're doing this and you're doing your green juices and you're having your salads, then you're teeing all this up to go. And if it's not getting out the door, you're just going to be walking away with all this awakened, hydrated, reconstituted waste, which can make you feel really kind of sluggish and like you've got a bigger midsection than you really need to have. And it's simply because you've teed it all up, in which case, let's get it out the door. And if you can't go for a colonic every week or every year, twice a week, you could at this stage when you're doing that much juicing and salads and you've come off of a couple of decades or more of mainstream living, you could have a colonic every day for a year and have absolutely, forgive the pun, kick-ass colonics. But if you're not in a situation where you can do that, then, you know, I if it were me, I would just keep doing the enemas as long as waste was leaving. Now, some people say, oh, that's excessive. You shouldn't do that. It's not healthy. You're going to become addicted. Well, if you don't do that, you're going to be septic. And if you get that waste out, then your intestine is going to get its kinetic, its peristalsis back in action. And you're actually going to have the chance of having good flora again. But there's the transition period. It can be kind of chaotic. It can be kind of nerve-wracking. Because you think, how can you know, how could I need this many enemas? Because I'm doing them all the time and there's huge amounts of waste leaving. But that's what you want to have happen. The waste leaving is the name of the game. And if anybody in health tells you differently, I say this lovingly, they're misguided. The waste inside of the body is what makes you unwell, emotionally, physically, spiritually, sexually, every level. It's the waste on all levels of the being. If the tissues are saturated in waste, if the intestine is full, and its layers are full, then you're not experiencing what it means to be a human being. You're experiencing what it means to be a human being with concrete in their midsection. So, you know, do what feels right. There's not a prescription, as it were. Remember that you're, as a woman, you're innately intuitive, and you have to tap into that intuition. Feel your body. Feel where you know that you've awakened things that may not be going on their own. You know, give yourself a chance to get to eliminate as much of it as possible on your own. I'm going to have you mute. If you can just mute. Maybe I need to mute you. I beg your pardon. Oh, I don't know. I'm wrapping up anyway. But just know that you have, just listen to your intuition and let that guide you. But know that you are on the right track. I hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Natalia. Very helpful. Have a great day. Thank you very much.
Good, good. Much love and support to you. Okay. Bye for now. All right. Now, let's see. Okay. It looks like, now, Hikari, I don't know if it's okay. That's strange. It came up as you being up again. Wait, maybe you are. Let me see. Forgive me if I'm calling on you again, but you didn't have your hand raised. But maybe, are you there, Hikari? No? Okay. Sharon, no, Kara. Here, wait. Okay. They're disappearing the second I hit them. I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong here. But Kara, let's see if I can bring you on here. Okay. Are you there? Kara? Okay, I have a hand here. Wait, I see that, Ryan, are you raising your hand? Is that, how are you on there?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Ryan.
Hi. Hi, Natalia, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. Wonderful to have you with us.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I just had a question. It's kind of been a long time coming, but, I was wondering if you could speak to athletes on a cleansing diet, like weightlifting or high demand sports, general recommendations or diet adjustments or things to be aware of when you're kind of living that kind of lifestyle.
Yeah, that's a great question. There's some background noise. I'm trying to figure out where it's coming from. If anyone, I may just ask everyone to mute their phones if they can for me. That helped. Wait, that's very strange. If everyone could just mute their phones and they hear me, I don't know where it's coming from, and it could be coming from anywhere. Nice. Okay, thank you. Okay, so Ryan's question about athletes is a great one. The important thing to remember is that athletes, the one most important thing they need is the electromagnetic energy. Bottom line, if that's not flowing, there is nothing that's going to give them the energy to do what they need to do, whatever their sport may be. So removing the blockages is the quintessential ingredient in every athlete's diet. Okay? And beyond that, it's just about what can they take in that will nourish their bones and tissues and help to accelerate the repair of their muscle tissue and support all their, you know, their organs, keep their blood chemistry really nice and clean so that they can feel vital all the time and be at their best. And that really comes down to the same things that, you know, that you want to be eating anyway. Because really, we should all be athletes. We should all be living an athletic lifestyle, whether we're competitive or not is, you know, is another story. But we want to be taking in things that give us the most possible vitality and increase cellular repair and cellular turnover. So, and it helps remove any kind of toxins that get stuck in the cells. So by that, we come down to a diet that is extremely green, so largely green juices, green salads, and then lots of cooked vegetables as desired. The goat cheese aspect is a great thing to throw in there. Any kind of raw dairy, if it's coming from a good source, will be fine. Does not have to be in there. There are some fantastic vegan athletes out there that don't take in any of that stuff, but they also don't take in the soy stuff. So we want to make sure not to, you know, think in terms of, oh, well, most athletes are pounding protein, so I need to pound protein too, and let me find another source of it. For example, the pea protein. Okay, this is something I find absolutely laughable. Take in lots of alfalfa sprouts and sprouted sprouted legumes, if you like, but pea protein is an absolutely dead, functionless substance. That's going to slow you down. And then you also have to ask yourself, well, what am I trying, if am I trying to be something that's out of the scope of nature? Is, you know, am I trying to be bigger than I really would normally be? Am I, remember that when you see bodybuilders or when you see a lot of athletes that are, most athletes aren't eating properly. So what they're consuming is actually creating a huge amount of inflammation and bloat in their bodies. If you were to take all that away, they'd be a lot smaller. If you take somebody who's a really a clean man and he takes in the best possible substances for his electromagnetic power and he's, you know, using his body in a powerful way, he's going to have very lean but super, super strong, pound for pound, way stronger than, you know, his bulky, bloated, distended, inflamed counterpart. And that's really what it comes down to. What are you seeing when you're seeing a big dude? Are you seeing a lot of expansion and inflammation and water retention that's on top of the muscle that's kind of mixed in there, making it look bigger? It's an illusion. Or are you seeing really powerful lean muscle? So, yeah. But, I mean, you can, having said that, there, you know, you can certainly take in some really high quality protein if that makes you feel better, but it kind of doesn't, when you have to think about the individual as well. So here, if we talk about, you know, Ryan, I don't see you that aligning with your spirit. So it may make you bigger or make you feel more confident in terms of your dietary intake on a sort of from a purely kind of textbook level, but knowing you, it's just the very little I know of you, knowing your energy, you're a spiritual man. So, you know, where is that going to interfere? Are you going to compromise your connection with spirit by taking in things like that?
Right, right. Yeah, I think I've been, there's a lot of programming around protein. And despite how much I know, I think this conversation will actually help me let that go quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Good. But you know what? At the end of the day, it's about your performance. Like, forget about everything else. What is, you know, my competitor doing? What are my peers doing in this realm? Like, how do I feel? You know, when I get out there on the field or on my surfboard or on the slopes or whatever the person's, you know, field of athleticism is, how do I feel in my body when I'm, like, you know, face to face with my sport and in it. You know, if you
right.
feel well and you feel energized, then you're doing it perfectly. And if you're not, then you have to ask yourself, where is the blockage? Because it all comes down to life force. Is it emotional? Am I not inspired? Is there something in my life that's not working? Are my intestines not working as well as they should be? And maybe is there something in my water that's not clean enough? You know, a lot of times people are looking at the wrong things. So if they're feeling devitalized, it may be because the water they're drinking lacks vitality, or the air they're breathing lacks vitality. Not necessarily that they're, you know, not taking, they're missing a substance in their nutrient kind of you know, on the side of the packet, as it were.
Nice. Well, thank you so much.
No, it's my pleasure. Oh. And one thing I'll add is on the subject is kind of funny because, you know, when you're an athlete, you shouldn't need to be taking this, like, I see when I go to Central Park and I'm on my bike, I just see all these people jogging or walking with these belts of water around their waist. I'm sure you've all seen this. It's comical. And then the runners with their running goo and all this stuff. I will go out for hours, and just because I enjoy it, you know, if I can, because I've got the 3 kids and I can't often get out for a long time, but I can easily do a 1 to 2 hour workout and feel great. Not have had a sip of water upon rising, not have taken in any water while I'm riding. I don't even take water on my bike. I have a little holder for it. I never take water with me. You know, I'm not saying that it's bad to drink water while you're working out, but you shouldn't leave home like a camel, like you're never going to see water again, or if you don't have your little packet of goo, that you're going to run out of energy. If that's the case, if you need it that badly, something is wrong. You're actually not an athlete. You're dependent. You need stimulation. You're dehydrated. You know, and I know this is not the case for you, but I'm throwing it out there because there's this whole culture around exercising with dependency, and that to me isn't what being an athlete is about. So anyway, right, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for coming on. That was a great question.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye for now. Okay. Anyone else? Let's see. I've got a hand raised over here. I'm finally figuring this thing out. Denise, did you raise your hand?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Oh, great. Yes. Yes. Lovely to have you with us.
Okay. So I had a question about colonics. So I was introduced to your work a couple years back and was doing it successfully and got the Liberator and have, you know, used it and loved it. But like some other callers have said, have reverted back to negative, bad habits. So I really want to start doing this for real again and start the whole process. But I'm a little bit overwhelmed with the whole issue of water and getting a filtration system and all of that. So my question is it better to do the colonics and get waste out even though I'm using tap water without a filtration system, or to just hold off on that and wait until I can actually afford one?
Okay, I'm going to tell you my unadulterated version of the answer to this question. I use my unit everywhere. I do have, there's a little filter inside the Liberator unit, to prevent basic things, but, probably rocks coming through and a whole bit like that. No, but seriously, I mean, it has a little filter on it. But basically, I use it everywhere in the world. I don't blink. I have actually used my enema kit in Zimbabwe without any kind of, anything to disinfect the water. And I found out later that there was an anthrax epidemic at the game reserve where we were staying, and there were hippos dumping in the water. Okay, so, and I'm using my enema kit. And did that deter me? I'm afraid not. Did I feel great every day? I did. I'm not saying you should do this at home. You know, I kind of go off the grid in a lot of ways. But the thing is that people make way too much to do about, there will be a million people that disagree with me, and that's fine, and they can do that. And I'm just telling you what I do. I'm not telling you what you should do. But I don't bother with it. I don't worry about it. I don't give it a second thought. The water is going in, it's going out, it's taking out what really needs to go, and that's the end of the story. Now, that's not to say that, you know, from another perspective, why would you do an implant if it wasn't because it's getting into the intestinal walls and going deep and, feeding the flora? Yeah, it's going into your tissues. It's true. But it's really hitting waste that's reconstituting, that it's pulling out. And those implants don't work very well unless your colon is empty. So, you know, if you're going to do a wheatgrass juice implant, for example, you want to do that after all the waste is left. Now, if you're doing an enema and you really feel more comfortable using bottled water, go ahead and do it. Most bottled water isn't much better than tap water anyway. But and you can create systems. There are systems you can put in your home that that will improve the quality of the water. There's some really good systems. There's one that comes to mind right now. I'm forgetting the name of it. I think it's called Soria or Soria. Very popular one amongst some of my clients. And I think it's the one they use at Pure Food and Wine here in New York City. But and those are like big household units you can use to, you know, in which case, I mean, that's the kind of thing I'll put in probably when I have my own house. But I wouldn't use, I would not make that the thing that holds you back. I would just, I would go for it if it were me. Again, if it were me, I'm not going to tell you what you should do, but if it were me, I would just totally go for it, get the waste out. That it's, whatever is brewing in you while that's sitting inside of you is far worse than anything that you could be getting from the tap water that's going into your 5-gallon tank.
Okay. And another thing also that I was had a curiosity about, after I have done the colonics, there's sometimes where I feel throughout the day where I feel like I'm going to have a large bowel movement. And when I do go to the bathroom, I get like a mucusy, like stringy pieces that are, that kind of look like they have some like blood attached to them. So
that's,
I was just
totally
curious
normal.
As to like totally normal
yeah.
to have that and to feel
it's
like it's
totally
a large
normal.
Bowel movement, but it's only like a small piece of, and what is that exactly?
You know, there's, I wish we had a colon therapist around to ask exactly what it's about, but it's, it happens to everyone, and it's just a little excessive mucus in the intestine. And next time we have Joanna or Jen Colombo around, we can have them speak to it. But it really happens to everyone, and I can tell you that I've been doing this for so many years, for 15 years. I've had thousands of colonics, and my system is incredible. Like I've had what you talk about, you know, periodically. I would say one out of maybe 10 colonics, I'll have that kind of an event happen. And it's a kind of a weird feeling. Like you think there's got to be more there and it's not. And it can be blood tinged. In my case, I don't have them. The blood tinge doesn't happen anymore. It hasn't happened for years. But so I think that must be part of a healing process. But, you know, the mucoid plaque needs to leave. And to me, it looks more like mucoid plaque than mucous membrane, so it doesn't worry me. But it, you know, that definitely happens. Usually, a very, very small amount, you know, just but it's noticeable. And yeah, I mean, let's talk to Jen or Joanna about it next time. But
okay.
I wouldn't be concerned. I know that Anna Ladd Griffin has some concern around that and spoke to the to Dr. Strobeck about it, and he. Had, you know, Dr. Strobeck, John Strobeck wrote the foreword to Detox to Women for me, and he is Linda Strobeck's husband. He's the chair, he's basically one of the biggest heart surgeons on the East Coast. He's a genius, and he said, absolutely no worries. It's just some sloughing from the intestine. It's no problems at all. So, yeah, I mean, if that puts you at ease a little bit, I hope it does. But you know what you will find is that it's so counterculture. I won't say it's counterintuitive because it's actually quite intuitive, but it's counterculture to think that hydrating the colon, moving waste, could actually make the colon stronger. But it truly does. I would never sort of stand on a soapbox here and say how great it was if I didn't physically embody the changes and it wasn't. For truly the highest good of the body. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, you kind of wonder how much food the human body is really supposed to take in. That's sort of what I've come to the end of it. It's just, we're probably not supposed to be eating very much because, you know, if we're taking in substance, if we were living the way we should be living, which is in highly electromagnetically active air and drinking electromagnetically active water and living in bodies that were super alkaline, and the foods that we ate were coming from the richness, the rich abundance of the microbial sort of plentitude of the earth that's connected, you know, interconnected throughout the whole sphere, going deep into the center of the planet and having that kind of power coming through it, and our feet were walking on in that soil. I mean, we would be taking in our nourishment from all these different places. What we have is basically a life that's cut off from all of that and addiction to food. It's hard for us to imagine a world where we wouldn't need to eat so much because we eat so much out of need for pleasure and desire and something that brings us joy in life because, you know, there's just so much, so many of the threads have been cut off that we don't have the natural joy that we would have. Now, you can cultivate that even when you're living in a world that's cut off. Again, being in the world but not of it. But bottom line is, it's too much food. It's decades of too much food. The body doesn't know what to do with it. It's storing it, and it needs to leave. But that's so counterculture. It just it flies in the face of everything our culture does, because really at the end of the day, we live to feed ourselves and to have relationships that feed our egos and our sex drive. So if that's the culture that we've cultivated, that's what we're executing on. And that's actually, you know, I'll say again, pathogenic. It's just like living for self and desires and lower indulgences. Then, you know, we've got it all wrong. And so there's a saying, you know, you've gone a long way, baby, and then you've come a long way, baby. And then they did the Marlboro ad, or the sort of the PS, the public service kind of one that was, you know, you've come the wrong way, baby. Well, we've come the wrong way, baby, you know, and now there's only one way to turn it all around, and that's to do that which will reconnect us, remove the obstruction so that we can be connected again to what works, and then we won't be serving these lower impulses, these lower desires. We'll be serving something that actually enriches the whole, and thereby enriches us too. It's a funny place to find ourselves, because it's the first generation that's really having the big awakening, you know, to this degree. They started to have it in the 60s, sort of started and stopped, and you know, I guess the abundance in our country at that time made it hard to resist, you know, all those baby boomers that really had it so good, you know, living in the milk and honey of America at that time. So I think that maybe stopped the show when, if things didn't turn out to be so good on an economic level in America, they may have really gone deeper into where they were going. But now we're at the point where there is nowhere else to go, and there is not a milk and honey coming to this country or to the Western world. You know, the only milk and honey is the real milk and honey, which is the milk and honey of the cosmos, and that's where we're going. So, it's really interesting to be alive right now and be a part of it, I guess is where I'm going with that. But in the meantime, a huge part of that is removing the blockage. And this is the one last thing I'll say, and we can wrap up the call. Those who speak about love and light, if they're not removing the blockage, they're talking about love and light behind clenched teeth and clenched fists. Like, I will be love and light. I will be. I know if I focus on it hard enough, it's going to happen. No. That's exhausting, and it's a lie. And if it feels like a lie, it is a lie. It can only happen when it's authentic, when that which is causing the contraction, causing the impaction, leaves. And then what you're left with is clean, healthy tissue, open heart, open mind, happy spirit, clean, happy relationships, conductivity of electromagnetic life force energy. And there we have it, folks. Okay, well, let's see. It's just after 2, according to my clock here, and I suppose we should wrap up, but everyone has such amazing questions, and if you know what, gosh, I hate to leave anyone hanging. Denise, I see you have your hand raised here, so if I'm right, here, let me click you on here, and then we'll see the last one here. Denise, you there?
Your response is very helpful.
Okay. Okay, great. Okay. Sorry, I think the hand was still up. Okay. All right, wonderful. Okay, everyone, have a terrific day wherever you are in the world. It may be the end of your day or the beginning of your day if you're in Hawaii or Los Angeles, the end of your day if you're in Europe or further east than that. And send you great big hugs and tons of support, and I hope we can be of continued service in whatever way you need. Okay, lots and lots of love, everyone. Bye for now.